Hashtag you don't have to be Jewish.
Dr. Carl Krzelznicki. He is an Australian science communicator and popularizer. Well, a very, very good morning to you. How are you?
Very well, thank you, Dr. Howard. Lovely to work with you.
Well, it's, yeah, I've been called a lot of things in my time. Doctor, hardly, but it doesn't really, it doesn't really matter. My mother would be very, very proud of that. Tell me, what is a science communicator and a popularizer?
Somebody who tells stories about science. So on one hand, you've got scientists who are really good at doing the science, mm-hmm. but in many cases, they're not particularly good at talking about it. After all, why would you expect a carpenter to also be a chef, or a chef to be a car mechanic? So there's a need for people who have some degree of scientific background who can turn stuff that the scientists talk about into plain English. So, for example, there's a story about a little creature that every time it wants to have a bowel motion actually grows a new anus. Why is it that when women live together under the same roof, they tend to synchronize menstrual cycles? And how can you use this information to tame a wild dog? Or how is it, for example, that we find that there are black holes missing? There should be a billion black holes in our galaxy, but then we only found about 37. Or how come dead fish can swim after they've been dead for a few hours? Or what's the story with the electric car versus the internal combustion engine car? And what's this murder hornet that seems to be migrating across the USA? And how did pterosaurs fly? And why is the sky blue at night? And what does a red sky at night mean? And everything else.
These and other burning questions. These are some of the things that we're going to be discussing. I'd love listener questions on their burning science questions. 345-19 or 0618951019. But one of the things that we want to talk about today is orange juice. Does some orange juice go bitter quickly and others take longer?
Yes, I've often wondered about this. Mm. You make orange juice and it's really delicious. And then after a little while, it's bitter. Why? And then how come when you buy orange juice over the counter, it can be days or even weeks after manufacture and it's not bitter? And I knew it was some sort of chemistry, but I didn't know what sort. Mm. So I went looking and it turns out to be a chemical, a bitterizing chemical called limonid. There's a whole family of them, and the one that is causing the problem is limonin, L-I-M-O-N-I-N. And you find it in all sorts of citrusy-type chemical fruits, such as grapefruit and lemons and oranges, of course. And the human tongue is incredibly sensitive to it and can pick it up, this bitter-tasting chemical, in proportions of parts per million. So you don't need much to set off a bittering reaction in your tongue. And it turns out that there's none of this chemical in orange juice, but there is a what they call a precursor chemical called LARL that gets turned into limonil. It's more so or less so depending on whether you pick it early or middle or late in the season, or navel versus Valencia oranges. And so we know it's causing the bittering taste, the bitter taste. How do you stop it? Well, there's a whole bunch of pathways. One is to add another chemical to the orange juice that fills up the bitter receptor on your tongue. So the way that you taste bitter is that you have these receptors hidden in your tongue, very tiny receptors. Mm-hmm. The chemical lands in that receptor, fits exactly, sends an electrical signal to the brain. Oh, that's bitter. And what they've come up with is a chemical that they add to orange juice. It kind of fills that bitter receptor to the extent that firstly, nothing else can get in, but it doesn't make it fire. It doesn't fire off a bitter reaction, but it stops other chemicals from getting in there. And of course, other ways of doing it are filtering out the chemical using plastic sort of films, and they have their advantages and disadvantages, and also adding chemicals that stop the formation of the precursor chemical into this limonil. All of that so that we can buy orange juice days and weeks old and still not have it bitter at all. Who would have thought there was so much chemistry?
Unbelievable. Really, really interesting. And the amazing thing is what you're saying is then that becomes practical. Once we understand that, then we can use it in, you know, in the preservation of orange juice or anything else for that matter, really, once we understand this.
Sure. Science does so much good for us, but for me, one of the greatest scientific discoveries was carried out by John Snow when there was a cholera epidemic in London, and he mapped the address of everybody who had cholera back in the 1700s, and they all lived within a circumference, a tight circumference of this particular water pump. Because in those days, there was no water coming to your houses. Mm-hmm. You actually had to go to a pump and pump it up, and it somehow got contaminated. And he did the illegal act of disabling this very precious water pump, so people had to walk somewhere else, and he then stopped the cholera epidemic cold. So that great discovery that clean drinking water is incredibly important for health. Wonderful discovery.
Isn't that interesting? Charles wants to know, why do we sneeze when we look at the sun? Why do we sneeze when it's cold, when we are cold?
Ah, this is called the Achu reflex, A-C-H-O-O, and was first mentioned in the scientific literature in the 1980s. They knew about it in the First World War and the Second World War when pilots would come flying out of cloud into sunlight, and a small percentage of them would just suddenly start sneezing. If it was just a gentle one-off sneeze, no big deal. But if they were sneezing repeatedly, this would interfere with their vision, and they could get shot or fly into the ground or something bad would happen. So ARCHU is a really tortured acronym. A, standing for autosomal. Okay, that means it's some sort of genetic thing that's carried from generation to generation. C stands for chromosomally mediated, which once again just means genetic.
Right,
they're
right.
Really trying
that's,
to...
Some of us are sneezers and others aren't, yeah.
Yeah, H stands for helio, meaning the Greek word for sun. O is for ophthalmic, meaning eye, so you look with your sun, with your eyes at the sun. And the last O, A-C-H-O-O, is for outburst. And it happens to 3% of the population, and it's carried genetically, and there's a pair of brothers, Pakistani brothers working at Harvard University, who discovered that not only do they have it, but they're able to trace it back through their family and work out its inheritance. It happens to 3% of the population, as I said, varying from the very soft to the very hard. At the very hard end, you go from one room into a more lit room, and suddenly you've got 7 sneezes in a row. Really inconvenient. At the other end, you're sort of thinking, I'm sick of feeling like I want to sneeze. I'll just go and stare at the sun for a second. Then you get one sneeze, and that's it. Mm. And it's due to cross-wiring in the brain, where light from the cranial nerve for vision cuts across onto the sneeze reflex. Sneeze is a very powerful reflex. If you've got to have a sneeze reflex, you've got to have a strong one rather than a weak one, because sneezing gets rid of dirt and the like going into your lungs. And you really want a strong reflex, and you'll survive better if you sneeze more often.
I'm a very, very big sneezer. Very, very big sneezer. And, you know, when my kids can see that I'm about to sneeze, they literally clear the room because they know that, that it's an event. It's seismic. But I do need to leave it there. I can't wait to chat to you again as shortly. We'll chat to you next week. Dr. Carl Krzelnicki, Australian scientist and a communicator, talking to us about all things science.